and unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome. It's nice to see you. I just want to see, nice to see everybody. As most of you know, we are giving a series of talks on the Buddhist paramitas or perfections, generosity, ethical conduct, patience, effort, meditation, and wisdom. And tonight I'm going to give a talk on the third paramita, Kasante Paramita, the perfection of patience, which is also translated as forbearance or tolerance. But I'm going to start out with a story. And this happened either before I had started practicing Zen or maybe just a little bit after. One evening, my wife and I were driving to a restaurant for dinner, and it's a restaurant we'd been to a number of times before. I was driving, and I knew the way, and she started giving me directions, you know, turn here, don't take that street, go this way. And I was getting angry. I don't like getting directions or suggestions if I haven't asked for them. And eventually, I yelled at her. I don't remember exactly what I said, but it was something like, God damn it, I don't need directions. And it was loud. And the volume shocked me. And it shocked her. I mean, I didn't see it coming. I didn't realize I was that upset. And I didn't think at all about how to handle it. So we drove on in silence, and we got to the restaurant and had a kind of a silent, distant dinner. My apology didn't change the atmosphere at all. I felt terrible. I thought, God, you know, I could have said nothing. I could have made a joke. I could have just matter of fact said, hey, I don't want any directions or something like that. Any of those things would have been better. That night, I did not have patience for something that bothered me. And I didn't notice that my anger was building up. And I didn't think at all about how to handle it. I just, you know, blurted it out. It was a very good lesson, and I haven't forgotten it. And then in preparing for this talk, I wanted to just see what Carolyn's memory of this was. So I asked her, you know, do you remember that time we were driving to the patisserie and I yelled at you because you were giving directions? And she didn't even remember it, which really surprised me because I sure did. And so then when I reminded her, I kind of told her the same story I just told you. She said, oh yeah, I remember. And all she said was, just make sure when you give your talk to tell everyone that I was giving you good directions and you should have followed them. But what is patience or tolerance? It's defined as the capacity to accept or tolerate problems or suffering without becoming annoyed or anxious. And I think you could add, without trying to avoid or deny problems. And how does one develop patience? It doesn't just automatically appear in our character. Think about all of the training that firefighters and emergency room staff and EMTs get that allow them to enter into like a crisis situation and think about, you know, what to do and how to do it, and most of the time remain quite calm. What would be the equivalent kind of training in Buddhist practice? The foundation of our practice is that we turn towards whatever's happening to in our life. And this is very difficult, especially when things are falling apart. It's our impulse and habit to go in the other direction, away from pain, you know, denial, distraction, blaming. But here is where patience can be so helpful. And a regular meditation practice is a great way to develop the ability to be patient. As you know, It's a very physical practice. We learn to pay attention to the body, to our posture, to our breath, and to what our senses are picking up, what sights and sounds and smells, and what thoughts and feelings are coming and going moment by moment. And experiencing some physical pain during meditation happens to all of us. And this is a particularly good place to learn to develop patience. When something hurts, instead of immediately changing your position to get some relief, work with it for a little bit. If your knee hurts, instead of moving your legs immediately, do you notice if your shoulders are tight or if your jaw is clenched? Is the pain increasing or decreasing? Are there spaces without pain? Can you notice parts of your body that feel okay? Pay particular attention to your mind. When you have pain, can you keep your mind relaxed? If your knee hurts, can that happen without hating the pain? Is your mind making the pain better or worse? Believe me, it can do either one. Meditation practice can also be a place to learn patience with emotional experiences, and that's with painful emotional experiences. And that's a very useful skill because we all have some painful physical or emotional experiences in life that can't be fixed. And Norman Fisher's book, The World Could Be Otherwise, he talks about this. He says, this practice with physical discomfort extends to emotional pain. Once you get the point in your body and all the way to your heart and soul that avoiding pain, adjusting, blaming, and perseverating about it makes the pain worse, you see that facing pain with tolerance and dignity is much better. But that's something we have to learn how to do. Doing this practice over and over again every day for years really helps us notice what's going on in our body and mind. And I would say it gives you a space to think about how to respond to something, how to react to something, instead of just reacting the way I did in the story that I told you. If we do respond in a way that doesn't work well, our meditation practice will probably help us notice that and probably make some corrective action. Sometimes patience is misunderstood as passive, you know, just observing with a there's nothing I can do attitude. But this is not the case. It's always recommended that we fully engage with whatever is happening in our life, no matter what it is. So paying attention fully, noticing what's happening in your mind and body and around you, listening with full attention. Facing a problem in this way is not a passive position. It done well, it takes full energy. And we take action quickly when people are in danger or being harmed. If a child runs towards a busy street, a parent reacts immediately. And there's a story about Joko Beck, who was a wonderful Zen teacher into her, and she lived into her 90s. She lived down in San Diego, and one day she was walking on the beach, as she often did, and she encountered two men fighting, and they were really going at it. They were hurting each other. She was in her mid-70s when this happened, but she ran up to them and she yelled, "Stop it!" And they did. They kind of stopped fighting and they kind of looked at her and then they just walked away. The reading tells us that there are three areas of life where patience can be applied. One area is personal hardship. Another area is relationship with others. And the third area is the truth of existence. So the first area, personal hardship, includes things like illness, physical pain, wanting something and not getting it. So you applied for a job you really wanted, you didn't get it, or you discover that you have big financial problems. So things like that. And here I'm reminded of one of my favorite quotes from Suzuki Roshi, you know, the founder of the San Francisco Zen Center. He said, accept what is as it is and help it to become its best. With something like financial problems, it won't help to deny them or to, you know, pretend they don't exist or to blame and complain. If you do that, you're only adding to your suffering. It's better to admit, you know, this is how it is. This is the reality. What's the best response? Do I cut my expenses? Do I get another job? Can I patiently keep paying attention to this over time and make effort? The 8th century Buddhist scholar Shantideva has this advice. If you can find a solution, what is the point of being upset? And if you can't find a solution, what is the point of being upset? This is the practice of patience, to acknowledge the reality of problems in our life and to face them as fully as we can without adding extra suffering. And it can help us to remember, no matter what problem we're having, that many people are dealing with personal setbacks and feeling the same pain. See for yourself what it's like to be patient with your suffering versus resistant to it. And remember, being patient with suffering doesn't mean you can't try to make it better. The second area of life where patience can be practiced is relationship with others. This is a large part of everyone's life. Relationship with friends, intimate partners at work, with family members, or strangers. In relationship, anger is one of the most difficult things to work with when it arises, and there's a lot written about it. In the early texts, most of what was written was about how destructive it is to even feel anger, and often the advice was to not get angry. Well, that's great, but that doesn't help those of us who do get angry. Fortunately, more recent writers have had some very helpful things to say about that. Thich Nhat Hanh has a good quote here, and he says, I would not look upon anger as something foreign to me that I have to fight. I have to deal with my anger with care, with love, with tenderness, with nonviolence. Norman Fisher says that intimately being with anger when we are angry is the practice of patience. He also talks about acknowledging and experiencing your anger without waving it around. When angry, it's always better to be aware of it as soon as possible and take the time to reflect on whether or how to respond. In Dale Wright's book, The Six Perfections, Buddhism and the Cultivation of Character, he mentions the importance of humility in relationships, having an uninflated sense of yourself versus, you know, I know how things ought to be, I know how things ought to be done. The third area of patience is patience with the reality of our human life. This is impermanence, and eventually, for all of us, some version of illness, old age, and death. We will have to surrender all of our things, all of our accomplishments, our relationships, and our life. A friend of mine who was a writer and died about 5 years ago, and she had a long illness and she knew she was at the end, so she wrote her own obituary. It was a beautiful, beautiful obituary. And one of the things she said was, I have been given the gift of life and now I have to give it back. This is hard. It requires forbearance to accept this truth. Impermanence happens each moment of every day. Bodies change, people come and go in our lives, jobs change and end, vacations begin and end, thoughts and feelings and physical sensations come and go moment by moment every day. Awareness of daily impermanence over time can help us accept this condition of life. Buddhist teachings on emptiness, it's an easily misunderstood word and a really hard one to understand, that nothing exists in and of itself, and that all things, including us, are always in the process of change and depend for their existence on other impermanent things, is included in this third area of practice. This is a very complicated notion. Some of these ideas require a big shift in perspective, and that can take quite a while. It's not enough to only have some intellectual understanding of these teachings, but a felt sense of impermanence or our connection to all things in the world may be a long time coming. Here, Dale Wright recommends Dharmakasante, which is patient acceptance of the teachings about the nature of reality, even though they are not yet in your grasp. So in addition to these three areas of practice that are traditionally listed, I wanted to mention one other area. You know, there have always been big problems in the world: war, injustice, poverty, natural disasters, the occasional plague. Now, with modern travel and communication, we are so much more aware of them. But it also seems that there are some big new problems: environmental destruction and global warming, for example. And now, there's a renewed and long overdue exposure of widespread and long-standing racial injustice in the United States and around the world. This has gone on for many, many, many years, but there's a new attention being paid to it now. These problems need our attention and action, and even with it, damage done will take a long time to repair. What an important place to remember and practice Kasante Paramita. What can each of us do about one or more of these problems? How do we make some difference over the long haul without running out of steam? How do we sustain ourselves, try to help, and still enjoy our lives? These are questions for all of us to wrestle with. I'm going to finish now with a poem called Clearing by Martha Postlethwaite. Do not try to save the whole world or do anything grandiose. Instead, create a clearing in the dense forest of your life and wait there patiently until the song that is your life falls into your own cupped hands and you recognize and greet it. Only then will you know how to give yourself to this world so worth of rescue. I'll read that one more time. Do not try to save the whole world or do anything grandiose. Instead, create a clearing in the dense forest of your life and wait there patiently until the song that is your life falls into your own cupped hands and you recognize and greet it. Only then will you know how to give yourself to this world so worth of rescue. So that's all I have to say, and thank you very much for listening. I think we have 15 or 20 minutes or so if you want to unmute yourselves and if anybody has anything they want to say. My voice is about shot, so I'm not going to say much more. So Ken, you could probably cut the recording